ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
So we continue our study of Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4. So we're up to the prayers by the personality of Godhead, or the what the Lord said to the Brahmana, Devasa. So, Sri Bhagavan Devacha, this is verse 63, Canto 9, Chapter 4. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahmana, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. Report. All the great stalwart personalities in the universe, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are fully under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fully under the control of his devotee. Why is this? Because the devotee is anyabilasita sunya. In other words, he has no material desires in his heart. His only desire is to think always of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how to serve him best. Because of this transcendental qualification, the Supreme Lord is extremely favourable to the devotees. Indeed, not only the devotees, but also the devotees of the devotees. Srila Narottam Das Thakur says, Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nishtara Payachi Keva. Without being a devotee of a devotee, one cannot be released from material entanglement. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identified himself as Gopi Bhato Parikamalayo Das Dasana Das. Thus he instructed us to become not directly servants of Krishna, but servants of the servant of Krishna. So I should prop. Thus, he instructed us to become not directly servants of Krishna, but servants of the servant of Krishna. Devotees like Brahma, Narada, Vyasadev, and Sukadev Goswami are directly servants of Krishna. And one who becomes a servant of Narada, Vyasadeva, and Sukadeva, like the six Goswamis, is still more devoted. Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur therefore says, Yasha Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. If one very sincerely serves the spiritual master, Krishna certainly becomes favourable to such a devotee. following the instructions of a devotee is more valuable than following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. So these are very significant verses within the entire Bhagavatam. The Lord Himself, Bhagavan, describing to Devasa Muni that He is completely under the control of His devotees. You see that Srila Prabhupada, at times in his lectures, he was explaining how difficult it is to achieve Krishna over many, many millions of lifetimes, what to speak of being a fallen person in Kali Yuga. And then he would say, but here I'm giving Krishna, take him. So Krishna puts himself in the hands of persons like Srila Prabhupada and says that, if you give me to someone, then they can have me. Otherwise, it is not possible. So, we see that, Srila Prabhupada, he just had to, be wanting to give Krishna. And he could go anywhere in the world and give Krishna. And that easy, one could achieve Krishna. Although it's described in the Bhagavatam as very, very rare position. But we do not see that anyone else was able to do that. That's the practical application of this verse. We see that this verse coming to life in a personality like Srila Prabhupada and such personalities, Prabhupada and the various acharyas and great preachers within our movement. How easy they could give Krishna and Krishna would agree to be, yes, my devotee has said that you can have me, so you can have me. And that. So therefore, following the instructions of a devotee is more valuable than following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly. So following the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly, we see that people may try to attain Krishna even through reading the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Krishna is giving himself, in one sense, through the Gita, still there's a significant difference between the people who, the few rare souls that are able to take Krishna, study his Gita and attain Krishna consciousness directly from taking Krishna's instructions through the Gita, compared to accepting Krishna through a devotee who is giving Krishna. So Srila Prabhupada's You know, Prabhupada once said to Bhavananda that in the spiritual sky, Krishna asked me to come to this material world and preach Krishna consciousness. And I said to Krishna, I do not want to go to that horrible place. Prabhupada said that. Anyway, Krishna assured Srila Prabhupada that he would look after him and what have you. So Srila Prabhupada came to this world and preached Krishna consciousness, and you know, Krishna acted through Srila Prabhupada. That Prabhupada was so kind to come on behalf of Krishna, and if Prabhupada wanted someone to have Krishna and take up Krishna consciousness, then Krishna fulfilled his desire. So yeah, this movement is an example of that. So therefore, you know, for us, we understand that to serve Srila Prabhupada is more valuable than trying to directly take the instructions of the Gita or the Bhagavatam without going through a great acharya, a great devotee like Srila Prabhupada. It's actually better, much better to serve Srila Prabhupada and achieve Krishna's favour by getting the attention of Srila Prabhupada, by serving Srila Prabhupada. And then, it also. Hi, Krishna. Hello. How are you?
Good.
Yeah, that's good. And then it says that what to speak in my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotee, they're very dear to me. So, sort of part very, very dear, and if we try to become dear to Prabhupada, then Krishna says that we also automatically become very, very dear to Krishna. So a very easy process, actually. And we know how to please Srila Prabhupada. He has, Prabhupada wanted to establish this ISKCON movement to distribute the holy name and the teachings of Krishna and the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we try and help people to understand Srila Prabhupada's books and to practically be engaged in the service of Krishna, then Srila Prabhupada becomes very, very pleased with us. And, therefore, in everything we do, we always try to do things in such a way that we are trying to do things in such a way that Srila Prabhupada would be happy with what we're doing. So when in managing a temple, for instance, one may say, well, we're serving Krishna managing a temple, so much money is coming in and so much is being spent on deity worship, so much is being spent on the building, so much is being spent on this and that. So that's service to Krishna, but Srila Prabhupada had a particular formula that, 50% of the income should specifically go to book distribution, that's the real basis of the foundation of our preaching, the devotees teaching and studying the books and distributing that knowledge. You know, that is the foundation of the purity of the members of the society. So, those devotees who very carefully try and understand that, you know, there's a specific way that Prabhupada liked things done. He has a specific mood, a specific formula, and trying to understand that and follow that is more inclined, one is more able to get Krishna's mercy than even one becomes very expert in managing a temple but doesn't particularly take a lot of notice of Prabhupada's particular style of doing things. So also, you know, we see that Srila Prabhupada wanted that the holy name be distributed without discrimination, that everyone has the opportunity to chant the holy name of the Lord. And if they take chanting of the holy name, you know, sincerely, that they have the opportunity to become initiated devotees. And we see that when Prabhupada went to India with some of his initiated devotees, there was one of his godbrothers, you know, who spoke to Prabhupada and said that, you know, you can get them to chant and, you know, do some things like that, but, you know, you shouldn't give them this diksha initiation because, you know, we know that they're very contaminated in the heart and, you know, this is not proper. This is, you know, this would not be good like that. You know, these Western people. So Srila Prabhupada said, you know, he said, so what is diksha? Well, diksha is to give the initiation to chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But then he asked a question, so which is more powerful? Within the hearts, and there is millions and millions and millions of sinful reactions. Which is more powerful, that sinful reaction or one holy name of the Lord? And his godbrother had to admit, yeah, of course, one holy name of the Lord is more powerful than millions and millions of sinful reactions. And then he offered his pranams to Prabhupada and understood, yes, you know, you're doing the right thing. So we see there, even amongst very elevated Vaishnavas, that if they were to somehow influence the management of ISKCON, ISKCON would be a completely different place. And Prabhupada, therefore, understanding that, you know, some of them definitely had the wrong idea. At first, he encouraged helping to guide his followers, and then he was a bit cautious because he could understand that, there's a different mood in some of the the way things would have happened. So, in ISKCON, we try very hard to follow exactly how Prabhupada, you know, his mood, this ISKCON movement reflects his mood he's been given, let's say, full authority, power of attorney by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, and therefore, for instance, you know, we may have been asked to chant 64 rounds, and anyone who couldn't chant 64 rounds would not be accepted, you know, within the movement. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, he said that then, okay, then 16. And we understand that by chanting 16 rounds, we get the same benefit of chanting 64 rounds. See? So in other words, in order to attain Krishna, we would have to chant 64 rounds in order not to be. But because Prabhupada says, you chant 16 rounds and I'll be pleased, then Krishna says, I will accept, you'll get the same benefit chanting 64 rounds. Because Prabhupada is pleased, then 16 rounds is the new 64. So we always have to remember that any devotee who really wants to make rapid, immediately recognized by Krishna, the easy thing is to try and do things what Prabhupada, particularly Prabhupada, liked. That's very, very important. So, that's why we have the Foundacharya, courses and disciples courses and things like that, because we do see that, of course, when Prabhupada was here, then, you know, the many of his disciples, and they all wanted to please Prabhupada. Even the next generation, like myself, when we come along, was just Prabhupada. We were more Prabhupada conscious than Krishna conscious. You know, we were always, it was a very common thing that, you know, you're very Prabhupada conscious. You know, we didn't feel that we knew Krishna as much. We understood Prabhupada and what Prabhupada wanted. We understood that's Krishna be happy. You don't have to think beyond that, you know. If you're doing what Prabhupada wanted, you understood, yes, Krishna be happy. But actually, as time went on, that mood disappeared. Not fully, but it surprises me even now. And therefore they've had to implement these courses, you know, the family charity, because course and what have you, because, you know, people forget the significance of Prabhupada, that somehow they're serving Krishna, but they're not quite understanding, you know, that link between Prabhupada and Krishna. They don't really have a proper understanding that is their real link with Krishna, you know, Prabhupada. And the devotees of Prabhupada, you know, those who are very devoted to Prabhupada, that is their link. That is their link to Krishna. So this verse here, very, very significant understanding. Any questions or comments or you want to add to that at all? Noticing things that are perhaps being followed in that line, or where you may sometimes feel that something, you know, people are missing that point. That's the main thing. That's good. Okay, no argument is always good. But you know, when we see a verse like this in the light of, you know, our connection with Srila Prabhupada, the whole thing comes to life. You know, the do's and don'ts of it. So then he says, O best of the Brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss or my supreme opulences. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-sufficient, but to enjoy his transcendental bliss, he requires the cooperation of his devotees. In Vrindavan, for example, although Lord Krishna is full in himself, he wants the cooperation of his devotees, like the cowherd boys and the gopis, to increase his transcendental bliss. Such pure devotees who can increase the pleasure potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly most dear to him. Not only does the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoy the company of his devotees, but because he is unlimited, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. Thus, he descends to the material world to induce the non-devotees and rebellious living entities to return home back to Godhead. He requests them to surrender unto him because, unlimited as he is, he wants to increase his devotees unlimitedly. The Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to increase the number of pure devotees of the Supreme Lord more and more. It is certain that a devotee who helps in this endeavor to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes indirectly a controller of the Supreme Lord. Although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, he does not feel transcendental bliss without his devotees. An example that may be cited in this regard is that of a very rich man. If a very rich man does not have sons and a family, he does not feel happiness. Indeed, sometimes the rich man adopts a son to complete his happiness. The science of transcendental bliss is known to the pure devotee. Therefore, the pure devotee is always engaged in increasing the transcendental happiness of the Lord. Again, very interesting that, you know, people do tend to think of God in terms of that, you know, he's self-sufficient, he's got everything he wants, and somehow or another that, you know, that's we're, you know, because we're not God and what have you, that, you know, there's a, we're a little bit a little bit insignificant to God. That's, you know, there's a, you know, he's looking after us and maintaining us and so many things, but in another sense, people do have the sense that really our, you know, they say, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Because, you know, really, you know, from God's perspective, what we're doing is like little ants crawling around. We're just very insignificant, you know, and God thinks it's a bit of a laughing matter. But, you know, you get a whole completely different perspective that although he's unlimited wealth, unlimited knowledge, unlimited everything, all his opulences in the spiritual world are unlimited, his potencies and powers, but he expands his happiness by enjoying the opulences of God with his devotees. That's what he likes to do. So just like parents, you know, they you know, having children, and you know, they like to make available all their whatever opulence benefits they've gained. They want the children to be able to. They want to enjoy that in the company of the children to see them enjoy that. So, of course, this is in our sense, of course, you know, there are similarities, but also in our case, there are some differences because people of this world, we tend to very selfishly do things for the sake of our children at the cost of others. So, you know, there are many rulers, like this is what happened to the Tsars of Russia, that, you know, they wanted that, you know, to have a son who would become the next Tsar, and he would inherit, you know, the Romanov dynasty, which had been there for 300 years. You will become the next Tsar, the son, like that. And of course, in that sense, the Tsars, rulers, they did things for the country for the sake of passing on a country to their son. But they never did anything for the people. And so the people revolted and ended up, you know, killing them. In our case, there's a similarity, but, you know, in the case of Krishna, everyone is the child of Krishna. So, you know, when we do something for our children, we quite often exclude other children like that. But when God does something for the children, it means every living entity is the child of God. So everyone is included in that. So there's a little bit, you know, it takes that selfishness out of there, that somehow, you know, God has a few people he'll look after. You can come back to the spiritual world and enjoy with me, and the rest of you can go to hell. No, he wants all of us, and therefore we're, you know, to increase the pleasure of God. Actually, he wants all living entities to come back to the spiritual world. So one may wonder, you know, that if we all go back to the spiritual world, then what happens to the material world? You know, have to close shop. Of course, that won't be a loss. But, you know, the understanding is, unfortunately, that just with the prisons, that you can empty out the prisons, and there's always candidates who want to go into the prison, and you know, they're criminal by nature. So there will always be living entities who will come into this material world, but you can empty out millions and millions of universes of living entities and let them all go back home, back to Godhead, and it won't make much of a dent. but he wants them all, you know. Keep bringing them all back to the spiritual world and enjoy unlimitedly with the personality of Godhead. And of course, the other thing is that there's no, it doesn't matter how many billions and billions of living entities go back to the spiritual world, there is unlimited spiritual opulence for everyone to enjoy in the company of the personality of Godhead. So, you know, there's some similarities in the example, but it's not complete, but we get the idea. But that tendency that we have comes from God himself. So now here also we see that in the previous verse it describes that the devotees, they don't have any material desires. They're only trying to do something for the pleasure of the personality of Godhead. And they know this science. The science of transcendental bliss is known to a pure devotee. That if one helps to increase the bliss of God by Krishna seeing that so many pure devotees filled with pure love are coming back to the spiritual world, and he's enjoying his spiritual opulence with his spiritual children like that, he becomes more and more blissful. It increases the variety and the unlimited pleasure of his bliss, and that's the science of making God happy. And this movement, therefore, is a movement to increase the bliss of God. So it's not just a movement to liberate people back to the spiritual world, it is there, but it is actually a movement to expand the transcendental bliss of the Supreme Lord. That is this Krishna consciousness movement. Yeah.
So here the language says, although the Supreme Lord is full in six opulences, he does not feel bliss without his devotees.
Yeah.
So as you were explaining that, you know, general conception of God is self-sufficient and we call Atma Rama, like he is self-satisfied, and Atma Kama, he doesn't have any desires. So he doesn't aspire for something outside of himself. And also a definition of God is that he is Akhila Rasamrita, like he is having all the rasas within himself, so he doesn't have to seek anything from outside. So from this statement it appears that there is some incompleteness for which he requires an external, basically we are external parts and parcels, but still he has a dependency on his devotees to increase his transcendental bliss. How do we understand?
Yeah, he he is capable of doing everything himself, but
just want to ask, actually the main question I had was, if this is the case, then if there are always going to be people in the material world, would it mean that he would always feel the dissatisfaction of not having everyone in his company?
Well, no, because it means that his desires, you know, God's desires, Krishna's desires, his are always being fulfilled unlimitedly. So there's never a point where his desires are not being fulfilled. So, for all time, his desiring that the living entities come back to the spiritual world, and basically at every moment that is happening, that unlimited spirit souls are going back to the spiritual world, and therefore his spiritual bliss is increasing. So so his desires are constantly being fulfilled. It never comes to the point where somehow, you know, things start going backward for God. That more living entities are going to the to the material world than they're coming back. You see, so it's you know, from a, you know, a business perspective, you know, a businessman always wants to make profit, but you know sometimes they lose money. But Krishna is never in that position. He's always, you know, in the profit zone, unlimitedly. So he's never actually, you know, in a situation where he's frustrated. It's just that he's, you know, that's the absolute nature, is that his desires are unlimitedly being fulfilled, and that process never stops. You know, so it's, you know, it's a concept that's very difficult to, you know, conceive of, that God has the unlimited capacity to fulfill his desires. So you, so you would expect, well, at some point, he's really fulfilled his desires at this point, but that capacity just unlimitedly just keeps being fulfilled. So there's never at a point where he's actually frustrated. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that although he, you know, then he also you know, his pastimes in the material world are also his pleasure pastimes. So when the living entities, you know, fall, you know, will come to the material world, and he's wanting them to come to the spiritual world, he enjoys the pastimes of reclaiming them. That's actually a pastime for him. That's a pleasure pastime. So again, even the process where he himself appears as Krishna and you know, takes part in the battle of Kurukshetra, and all of those pastimes that we see, they're all his pleasure pastimes. There's nothing difficult for him. They're all pastimes. He's enjoying ghastly rust with Bhishma, and this rust with this one, and this rust with that one. He's just enjoying all these unlimited variety. And then there are aspects of, you know, like with the ghastly rust, where that he may not necessarily be able to get that that type of transcendental bliss in the spiritual world, where he can get that transcendental bliss by coming to this world and experiencing that fighting and chivalry and what have you. So in that sense also, you know, there's expanding bliss in coming to himself, personally coming to deliver them. And then when he comes to personally deliver them, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna came to this world in the past times with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he experienced, while delivering the living entities, he also took the opportunity to experience the bliss of Radharani. That how does Radharani experience love of Krishna? So he tasted that while taking the role of a devotee. So he took the role of a devotee who likes to fulfill the desires of Krishna by preaching and sending living entities back. And in that role of a devotee, he's a devotee somehow in the material world, separated from Krishna, which gives him the perfect opportunity to taste what Radharani feels in separation from the Lord. Like that. So again, you see that even there, he's experiencing that transcendental bliss. And then apart from his own activities of preaching and experiencing the nectar of being a devotee, then he experiences the nectar of what his devotees do on his behalf. As we said, like a father, like, you know, someone sees the young child doing something even more wonderful than the parents. So one time Prabhupada said that he was on a morning walk, I think, and pointed up to the sky. Says that, you know, Lord Chaitanya, why he didn't preach, spread the Sankirtan movement all over the world. You know, Prabhupada's pointing up to the sky, like, you know, there's the rest of the world, you know, apart from India. Prabhupada said, he said, because he left this for me. He left this for me. See? So, you know, the pleasure that Lord Chaitanya or Krishna got from preaching was, you know, unlimited in itself, and he tasted the pastimes of Radharani, feeling separation from Krishna and so many living. He experienced that himself. But then even more so, he experienced that I'm going to allow my devotee to be loved and glorified even beyond what I have done. And that will bring me so much pleasure because I love my devotee so much because, you know, I did. So, you know, in this way, you know, like separation, you know, separation in the spiritual world, anything, when there's a want in the spiritual world, it's leads to expanding transcendental bliss. That's the difference. So yes, we can say there is a want in God, but whenever there's a want in the spiritual world, it just expands transcendental bliss. That's the difference. But if we have a want in this world, we suffer. So yes, you can say that there is sometimes, you know, there is some separation that Krishna experiences, and or there's something that, you know, he feels limited, or, you know, somehow his desires weren't quite fulfilled. Whenever that's there, it leads to his desires being more, his bliss being more unlimitedly expanded. That's the difference. So it's absolute. So yes, it's there, but it's not like the want of this world. So even it's there in God, it is a way of expanding the varieties and the, you know, unlimited ways of transcendental bliss. That want is there. So, you know, sometimes, you know, people have that concept of heaven. You know, there's sometimes you see a bumper sticker on people's cars that, you know, good girls go to heaven and bad girls go everywhere. Have you seen that? No. So they have this concept that, you know, you be a goody-goody, you go to heaven, you know, but if you really want to have a good time, be a bad girl. So, you know, people have that concept of heaven, you know, oh, why go to heaven, you know, like, earth is great. They put out a lot of movies like this, you know, that, you know, especially with these superheroes and that. You know, the superheroes always fall in love with a mortal, you know, and like in the Lord of the Rings and so many things, because they feel that somehow it's the imperfection of being mortal that makes life interesting, rather than everything's perfect and you're a superhero. Oh, that's boring, you know, like that. So people have that concept of the spiritual world, that because it's perfect, oh God, I'm not going to some place that's so perfect and boring, you know. I want the imperfection because that's where you can find some happiness. But what they don't realise is that the perfection of the spiritual world is that when things apparently wanting, it is there, that wanting is there purposely to expand transcendental bliss, but there is no difference between the wanting in the spiritual world and the having. There's no difference. It is absolute. Here, if you go without something, you don't also have it. You know, you can't have your cake and eat it too. But in the spiritual world, you can have your cake and eat it too. So that's the difference. We have to always accommodate that it is that these things are on the absolute platform. Then we can understand. And the absolute platform means that if there is some wanting, separation or limitation in the spiritual world, because it is absolute, it only becomes the cause of expanding transcendental bliss for everyone. That's the difference. So we've done two verses. But they're very, you know, as you see, As it says, that the science of transcendental bliss is known to the pure devotee. Hmm. Therefore, the pure devotee is always engaged in increasing the transcendental happiness of the Lord. It's a science. You know, it's very, very difficult to understand. I was at a cremation yesterday, and one boy had unfortunately committed suicide. But I was explaining that, you know.
Is it suicide, Prabhu? Okay.
What's that?
Is it suicide? Is it?
Mm.
Okay, I heard. Yeah.
So the point is that I was explaining to them that he liked to chant. He liked to do service. There was a lot of limitations because of his the difficulties he had with the mind. But I pointed out that a lot of the circumstances of his leaving this world was quite external, and one may focus on that more than one should, but one should understand, according to the Gita, that a person who did have a heartfelt desire to, you know, associate with devotees and chant Hare Krishna and serve Krishna, that burns up all the reactions to, you know, anything materially would appear inauspicious, all burnt to pieces. There's nothing inauspicious. And as Krishna says in the Gita that, one who does good, you know, one who has that little relationship with the Supreme, that they will never be overcome by evil. Even though it appears that there's so many inauspicious things connected, none of that will touch them on the spiritual platform. That all that will happen, as Krishna says in the sixth chapter, is that because of, you know, when someone has they've developed somehow an attachment to Krishna, he will just make sure that they have a nice birth. All the problems of their previous life will be just dissolved, and they'll just get the opportunity to take off, you know, where their heart was with that connection with the Supreme Lord. So it's just a very, you know, wonderful. So, but as I was saying to some of the devotees, you know, that we're supposed to be trained to understand the movements of the soul, you know. Whereas other people are caught up in the externals of what happened to the body and so many things, they won't be able to perceive, you know, anything in relationship to the soul. But our training is to see on that spiritual platform. So, and to literally seeing the movements of the soul, to make the correct arrangements at the correct times, for the benefit of that soul gradually to be pushed more and more, you know, towards Krishna for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So, you know, that whole spiritual science of understanding what brings pleasure to Krishna and what is the movements of the soul, we're helping the soul to act in such a way that they're gradually more and more acting in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. That's the spiritual science that we're trained to see. It is a science, but otherwise people, you know, they don't understand this. They can't see it at all. And even when it's pointed out to them by a devotee, they still struggle to, you know, understand. Is it real? Is that right? Yeah, you know. So, these are very, very elevated topics. You know, when we're talking about that, when you talk about what brings happiness to someone, you know, here we're discussing the happiness of God. You know, what's going on deep in his heart. Very, very intimate discussions, you know, about the nature of the Supreme Lord. You know, you can scour through the Quran and the Bible and so many things, and you know, this sort of information, and here it's being revealed by Bhagavan himself. He's telling us personally how he, you know, what makes him happy and what have you. And as I was saying before, that tendency, you know, we understand that we can barely imagine how much nectar Chaitanya Mahaprabhu derived by absorbing himself in the bliss of Radharani or chanting the holy name in separation through the sanctuary. We can barely imagine. And Krishna's saying here, despite that, despite my spiritual opulences, you try and imagine how much happiness I got when I saw Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. As we were saying, Prabhupada, you know, he was on a morning walk and looked up at the sky. Lord Chaitanya, he preached in India. Why did he not take the Sankirtan movement here? Because he left this for me. That's Krishna's happiness. So therefore, you know, understanding that, you know, one who takes pleasure in Prabhupada's happiness, that's, you know, one might, you know, what we notice with the expansion of, you know, the Acharya's books, you know, in one sense, people, you know, devotees sometimes feel that they're in a better position. Oh, you know, previously you didn't have these Acharya's books, you know, Gopala Champu and, you know, this one and that one. No, we didn't. And they feel that somehow, we can get right into Krishna. You know, we can see, we can read these books. No. Because if they miss that point, that you can poke your nose into these books trying to understand Krishna's happiness with Radharani, but you'll not really understand Krishna's happiness. But if you try and understand how to please Srila Prabhupada, you'll make Krishna happy. You'll know exactly the science of how to make Krishna happy. You'll know Krishna intimately in his heart. Okay. So that's one of the things that many devotees miss, you know, in this day. They somehow not quite making that connection. How important it is to actually, you know, as they say, is, you know, don't act in such a way that God will, what is it? Don't act in such a way that you will see God. Act in such a way that God will see you. And if you want to do that, you look at his most dear devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and try and understand what pleases Srila Prabhupada in the way we do our service within ISKCON. Being very, very, very careful that, is this the way Prabhupada would have this done? What is his standard in this? If we're serving prasad, what's Prabhupada's standard? You know, sometimes I say to the devotees, actually, this is our ISKCON standard, we do like that. Oh, well, we do it this way. I'm thinking, who are you? I'm trying to tell you what Prabhupada's standard is. You think Krishna, you're going to replace Prabhupada's standard with your own new standard? What is that? You know, if you're serving prasad, what is Prabhupada's standard? If you're worshipping the deities, what is Prabhupada's standard? You know, if you're preaching Krishna consciousness, if you're doing anything, what is Prabhupada's standard? Devotees, if someone thinks, oh, well, we do it this way. You know, we're from this background, or we're from this part of India, or you know, we were trained up in this temple. You know, what excuse can someone give that they can say, well, oh, you know, well, we're not interested so much in Prabhupada's standard, we do it this way. So that's where we have to be very careful. And then, you know, then there can be a general laziness also. That I notice also with, you know, even senior devotees who were very much aware of how we very carefully followed Prabhupada's standard. But sometimes, because, you know, there's a lot of money in the movement, there's a lot of manpower, you know, okay, as long as, you know, things are going on, it doesn't really matter. But we can't be like that either. That's a great danger, of course, to let people be trained up for years and years without us ensuring, do you understand, you know, what Prabhupada would like when you're doing this service? You know, the other day, Balaram's appearance day, I came over to put the mandala, you know, to draw the little design on the bathing tank. So it was in the room there. And this has happened nearly every festival. So I come over, it's completely decorated, and I look at the top, and it's been carried down from probably up top. I had to get your wife to do it. She did a good job. There was so much dust, I could literally pick it up. I could have picked up a handful. Seriously, they were like clumps.
So people who decorated it, they didn't see that.
You could not see it. I'm telling you, there were you know,
like talking and doing it.
You know, there were clumps of dust, the size of big rose petals, and the whole thing. You could put your finger in any part from the top and rub it, and you would cover your finger in dust. And you know, I thought, who has, you know, the Prabhupada, you know, in deity worship, two main things: cleanliness, punctuality. You know, we do it bhakti, of course, but cleanliness and punctuality, they're the two main things. You know, cleanliness. To come in, well, I've done my service, you know, this is, and somehow or another, that the main thing that Srila Prabhupada would notice, they can't see at all. Now, Prabhupada, you know, if Prabhupada looked at that, they've got no idea that the first thing he would see would be the dust. I know that. I know Prabhupada walked in that room and he looked at that. He wouldn't see the decoration. He wouldn't see that. He would see, you've not washed it before you decorated it? That's the first thing. It's just, and so much dirt. For them, it's not even an issue. It's like, you know, who cares? You know, it's just so, you know, that's a whole different training, that what would be blatantly obvious to, you know, devotees previously, that something that would just really annoy Prabhupada, make him angry, disturb, you know, so much tamagun, that they can't even perceive it. And if you mention it to them, they feel like you're giving them trouble for something. So that's a big difference. See? Like that. So, you know, being very careful to, you know, what is Prabhupada's standard, what is he like, that's very important. Rather than somehow or another, there's this mood of, we don't really care, you know, we're serving Krishna and that's good enough. We're going to get the, you know, we're going to make it. We decorated Balaram's, you know, bathing tank. Balaram's going to sit on there. So it's more a mood of, you know, the Balaram be happy, but not necessarily the chariot. So in a big temple like this, with so many courses going on, there's so much, you know, we pride ourselves. You know, we're actually, you know, glorified all over the world for, you know, we do bhakti shastri, bhakti vaibhava, things like that. But, you know, to miss these fundamental aspects, then you sort of wonder, then you really, are we studying the same books? Yeah. Oh, she did a really good job. That's why I sent her particularly. I knew she would.
Time constraint, and she has to do it quickly.
Yeah.
That's how much she could do.
Yeah. That's right. They'd already decorated it. You know. So the decorations were on top of other dirt that we couldn't get to.
This,
what I would have liked to have done was made to start again. That's right. Wow. So that they remember it. Well, Balaram had to actually sit. The top was clean, but actually Balaram had to sit on top of a dirty asana. So, and I noticed also that the paint is all chipped off. Now, of course, you know, and the top was on the wrong way. But that's that particle board. It's like CFC, what do you call it? That board, little fibres, all. It's not a sort of wood, it's all pulp.
Oh, okay.
What do they call it? It's like the wood that's sort of been pulped and glued together.
I think it could be a
plywood.
No, not plywood.
It could be a chipboard, a compressed.
It's even finer than chipboard.
Yeah, it's
right?
Coming off.
Yeah. So, if you have a look at it, all around the edges, and of course the juice just soaking in, people will be drinking that.
Yeah, and the juice is it's acidic in nature.
Yeah. And little chips of paint will come off because like that.
Yeah.
So.
You should put a poly bag or something.
It needs to be, you know, it needs to be painted. The whole thing needs to be, you know, properly primed and painted.
Or you should have a stainless steel basin.
They need to sort that out.
Stainless steel is always safer.
Yeah. I'm not part of management because I don't really apparently have any ability to contribute. But someone should, do something to make sure that we have a proper standard and not just a show, you know. These things are there.
Because we are using most of the time, Prabhu. Most of the time we are using the table for
the
So why not have a stainless steel?
Yeah. The worst thing is when they painted the day before the Abhishek. I've seen them do things like that as well. So, you know, there's now, as we see here also, as we go through these verses, we see how very interesting that the Lord's devotees, they're in his heart. And as we see, as we'll read this, what's very interesting is therefore they know the heart of God. So it's not just that when we say the Prabhupada is so dear to Krishna, it means that he knows what Krishna wants because he's there in his heart. So it's not just, love my devotee because I love him, but he's really got no idea what's going on. Love my devotee, he's in my heart. That means he knows exactly what I know. He wants exactly what I want. When he's happy, it's because he knows it. Krishna's like that, see? So we follow Prabhupada because he is empowered to know Krishna's standard, what he wants, like that. So what Prabhupada sees, this is proper and this is not, then when we follow Prabhupada, we also know what's in Krishna's heart. And as soon as we don't have that connection with Prabhupada, Krishna's saying, you're not going to know. You haven't gone through my heart, Prabhupada. So how will you know what I want? You'll look at it and you'll not even see. You look at a pile of dust, and you won't see that that's disturbing to Krishna. But if you were Prabhupada conscious, you'll look at that and say, gee, Prabhupada wouldn't accept that. Krishna wouldn't be happy. That's the difference. So we'll read on. Since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is worshipped by the words Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitacha. Thus, he is the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. Devasa Muni was certainly a very great Brahmana, but because he was a non-devotee, he could not sacrifice everything in devotional service. Great mystic yogis are actually self-interested. The proof is that when Devasa Muni created a demon to kill Maharaj Ambarish, the king stayed fixed in his place, praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and depending solely and wholly on him, whereas Devasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, by the supreme will of the Lord. He was so perturbed that he fled all over the world and tried to take shelter in every nook and corner of the universe. At last, in fear of his life, he approached Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was so interested in his own body that he wanted to kill the body of a Vaishnava. Therefore, he did not have very good intelligence, and how can an unintelligent person be delivered by the Supreme Impersonality of Godhead? The Lord certainly tries to give all protection to his devotees who have given up everything for the sake of serving him. So a very interesting point there. We know that the Lord is Brahmanya, Devaya go Brahmanya Taja, the well-wisher of the Brahmanas. Still, because Devasa Muni was not a devotee, although he was a Brahmana, the Lord is inclined to be his well-wisher. But Devasa Muni does not have the good intelligence to take advantage of the Lord's protection, natural protection towards Brahmanas. As a Brahmana, if he understands, well, the Lord is the protector of the Brahmanas, I don't have to flee here and there all over the universe. I have to, you know, approach the Supreme Lord and ask him what I need, you know, for my, you know, protection. He doesn't have that intelligence because he's not a devotee. So therefore the Lord's giving protection, but he's not intelligent enough to take the Lord's protection. He's going elsewhere, doing other things and doing things that are very disturbing to the Lord. Another point in this verse is that attachment to Dargara Putrapa, home, wife, children, friendship, society and love is not the way to achieve the favour of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who is attached to hearth and home for material pleasure cannot become a pure devotee. Sometimes a pure devotee may have a habit or attraction for wife, children and home, but at the same time want to serve the Supreme Lord to the best of his ability. For such a devotee, the Lord makes a special arrangement to take away the objects of his false attachment and thus free him from attachment to wife, home, children, friends and so on. This is a special mercy bestowed upon the devotee to bring him back home, back to Godhead. So as we described previously, that the Lord takes away false attachment. You know, there's a proper mood of attachment to children, friends, home, due to our you know, love for Krishna. They're connected with our attachment to Krishna. That is proper. You know, we can be attached to things which have a relationship with Krishna, but a false attachment, the things that, you know, concepts that have no proper relationship with the Supreme Lord, we give up those false attachments. But Devasa Muni, of course, he had attachment to his body, for that he was prepared to kill the body of the Vaishnava. So that's a false attachment. As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees, who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me in the core of their heart, bring me under their full control. So, this Samadarshana is significant. The pure devotee is actually equal toward everyone. Bhagavad Gita 1854. Thus, he has full spiritual knowledge and is automatically liberated, Brahma Buddha. He can therefore see everyone on the spiritual platform. He can comprehend the happiness and distress of all living entities. He understands that what is happiness to him is also happiness to others, and what is distress to him is distressing to others. Therefore, he is sympathetic to everyone, as Prahlad Maharaj said, 7943. People suffer from material distress because they're not attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A pure devotee's chief concern, therefore, is to raise the ignorant mass of people to the sense of Krishna consciousness. So, the devotees, they're equal to everyone, trying to help them to become Krishna conscious. And and that's also the desire of the Lord. So, you know, by their pure devotional service, the Lord voluntarily comes under their control. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation, Salokya, Sarupya, Samipya and Shasti, although these are automatically achieved by their service. What then is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary system? The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. So here we're describing this relationship between the Lord and his pure devotees. So we've heard that they're within the core of his heart, and they're very dear to him, and even the devotee of a devotee is very dear to the Lord. The devotees, the Lord, they're so dear to the Lord that the Lord desires to enjoy his transcendental situation in the spiritual world with them, and feels a transcendental wanting, if that were not possible. Of course, that always is possible. So much are the devotees concerned with the happiness of the Lord that they're prepared to give up their wives, children, relatives, everything for his happiness. That's a very... very, very rare. We see here with Devasa Muni, he was prepared to kill a Vaishnava for the happiness of his body. Although he's a Brahmin, the devotees, they're prepared to give up everything, their own body, their own happiness, for the sake of the Lord. So we do not see this even in great yogis like Devasa Muni. And so these devotees, they understand that they're equal to everyone. They see that every living entity is part and parcel of the Lord, and the Lord's happiness is seeing those living entities properly looked after and taken back to the spiritual world. So that's they're prepared for this, that service. They're prepared to give up everything. And even liberation, they'll forego that. So they're really putting themselves out. You know when we in the course of our whole lifetime, even amongst friends and relatives and wives and daughters and so many personalities, and even amongst even in the circle of devotees, you'll very rarely find, if you meet a person, you know, in this world, that you think that person will give up everything they have for my sake. You know, to find that sort of person who has that sort of love for you. You know, you just over millions and millions of lifetimes, you know, you just, even amongst, you know, family, friends, relatives, you just don't find that sort of person. So Krishna is saying, these devotees, they're like that. And they'll just go without everything. They'll suffer for millions of lifetimes as long as I'm happy. You know, you cannot understand, you know, the love of the devotees for Krishna, is it? And so he loves them so much that they have that mood like that. So, you know, he's really pointing that out. And so therefore, they're right in the core of his heart. They don't know anything else but Krishna and his happiness. And therefore, he says, and therefore, I don't know any happiness besides their happiness, like that. So this is his statement. So the purport that since Devasa Muni wanted to chastise Maharaj Ambarish, it is to be understood that he wanted to give pain to the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the Lord says, Sarva Hriyam Mayam, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. The Lord's feelings are like those of a father who feels pain when his child is in pain. Therefore, offences at the lotus feet of a devotee are serious. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very strongly recommended that one not commit any offence at the lotus feet of a devotee. Such offences are compared to a mad elephant, because when a mad elephant enters a garden, it causes devastation. Therefore, one should be extremely careful not to commit offences at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. Actually, Maharaj Ambarish was not at all at fault. Devasa Muni unnecessarily wanted to chastise him on flimsy grounds. Nice statement, isn't it? Very flimsy grounds. He wanted to give him trouble. Such a great personality. To want to give such a great personality, trouble, and on such flimsy grounds. Devasa Muni unnecessarily wanted to chastise him on flimsy grounds. Maharaj Ambarish wanted to complete the Ekadasi Purana as part of devotional service to please the Supreme Person of Godhead, and therefore he drank a little water. But although Devasa Muni was a great mystic brahmana, he did not know what is what. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a so-called learned scholar of Vedic knowledge. The devotees, being always situated in the core of the Lord's heart, surely get all instructions directly from the Lord, as confirmed by the Lord himself, Bhagavad Gita 10.11, Tesham Vivanu Kampatam Maham Agyanajam Tamaha Nasiyam Atma Bhavasato Agyanadipina Vasvata. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. The devotee does not do anything not sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Dra Vigeya Nabujaya. Even the most learned or experienced person cannot understand the movements of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee. No one, therefore, should criticize a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava knows his own business. Whatever he does is precisely right, because he is always guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So many people criticize Srila Prabhupada. Very dangerous. Even amongst some of his disciples. O Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. So, as we said, the Lord is the protector of the Brahmins. The Brahma is very dear to him. So far, Ambarish has not had the intelligence to take advantage of that. But the Lord hasn't changed his position as a protector of the Brahmanas. The only difference is that now Devasa Muni may take the opportunity to take that protection by hearing, put his pride aside as the knower of everything and hear. He says, by offending Maharaj Ambarish, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against a devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. Purport. A Vaishnava is always an object of envy for non-devotees, even when the non-devotee happens to be his father. To give a practical example, Hiranyakasipu was envious of Prahlada Maharaj, but this envy of the devotee was harmful to Hiranyakasipu, not to Prahlada. Every action taken by Hiranyakasipu against his son Prahlada Maharaj was taken very seriously by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus when Hiranyakasipu was on the verge of killing Prahlada, the Lord personally appeared and killed Hiranyakasipu. Service to a Vaishnava gradually accumulates and becomes an asset for the devotee. Similarly, harmful activities directed against the devotee gradually become the ultimate cause of the performer's fall down. Even such a great Brahmana and mystic yogi as Devasa was in a most dangerous situation because of his offence at the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarish, a pure devotee. So I was hearing the other day that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had one disciple who was a sannyas. And he lost a little bit of faith in his spiritual master and actually fell down from sannyas. And then he actually became a Christian. And then, because he was a bit critical towards Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he fell down from that position and become basically, you know, drinking alcohol and, you know, different sinful activities. So, anyway, somehow or another, because of his suffering condition, he again took shelter of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And after some time of purification, he was reinitiated as a sannyasi by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And so, you know, by losing one's faith and even becoming critical, he fell down from everything. And then by again taking up that service, he was gradually reinstated. You know. So, for a Brahmana, austerity in learning is certainly auspicious, but when acquired by a person who is not gentle, such austerity and learning are most dangerous. It is said that a jewel is very valuable, but when it is on the hood of a serpent, it is dangerous despite its value. Similarly, when a materialistic non-devotee achieves great success in learning and austerity, that success is dangerous for all of society. So-called learned scientists, for example, invented atomic weapons that are dangerous for all humanity. A serpent with a jewel on its hood is as dangerous as a serpent without such a jewel. Devasa Muni was a very learned Brahmana equipped with mystic power, but because he was not a gentleman, he did not know how to use his power. He was therefore extremely dangerous. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is never inclined toward a dangerous person who uses his mystic power for some personal design. By the laws of nature, therefore, such misuse of power is ultimately dangerous, not for society, but for the person who misuses it. And of course, we take instruction from these verses that, we do see that as devotees, when one has been chanting Hare Krishna, sometimes different mystic potencies and powers, manifest. One gets the ability to, be able to control the minds of others. It's a mystic potency. So many different things. When one uses that for one's own design, one's own purposes, self-aggrandizement, activities which would not be pleasing to Srila Prabhupada but are meant to promote one's own agenda within social climbing or what have you, political power within ISKCON, what have you, then if it becomes dangerous to the devotional practices of others, one has to be very careful, because it tends to such activities can come back and bite one. Our best to the Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarish, the son of Maharaj Nabaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can satisfy Maharaj Ambarish, then there will be peace for you. So, described here, quoting from the Garuda Purana by Madhava Muni, the lesson to be derived from this narration concerning Maharaj Ambarish and Devasa Muni is that all the demigods, including Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are under the control of Lord Vishnu. Therefore, when a Vaishnava is offended, the offender is punished by Vishnu, the Supreme Lord. No one can protect such a person, even Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. And something I've seen over the course of time is that I've seen many devotees in very powerful positions in ISKCON, and who have utilize whatever powerful, whatever brings them power, either their, ability to control, the lives of many others, their ability to be known as great scholars of the scriptures, some prowess of some activities that they perform. But I have seen that in the case of many, many devotees in very powerful positions, that they have used that to the detriment of the devotional lives of people who've come to the movement, who they're supposed to be using their facility, to help them advance in Krishna consciousness, and somehow that they've actually used it against, people. Somehow, because when there's even as a devotee, we can, try and splash around in the sense gratification of the facilities that are there in ISKCON. There's a lot of facility for sense gratification in ISKCON. It's not the gross, it's not like nightclub sort of facility, intoxication and meat eating and so many things. But it's, you know, it's a prophet adoration distinction, you know, having accessibility to vast wealth and prestige, that sort of sense gratification, you know, that there's a lot of facility for that sort of sense gratification in ISKCON. And when a devotee who is competing for that sort of facility and they feel that someone is impinging upon their sense gratification, they can use their powerful position or abilities literally destroy a devotee's life, but for the sake of sense gratification, you know, in ISKCON. So I've seen that. It's unfortunate, but it does happen. And you know, in all cases, in 100% of cases, those persons become, you know, they become the loser. You know, it literally, of course, unfortunately for young persons under the influence of such, you know, if someone's not very strong in their Krishna consciousness, people can leave Krishna consciousness because of losing faith in leaders and also, you know, getting a really hard time from people that they thought may be looking after their interests who are actually working against them. So we've lost a lot of devotees over time from that sort of thing. I've seen that. But in the long run, you know, all of those those powerful, so-called powerful persons, devotees, they themselves have become the victim of their own misuse of power and facility for their own designs, which are definitely to the detriment of others. You know, that does happen. It happens practically in any spiritual movement. You know, you see that every spiritual movement, Christianity, Muslim religion, you know, Krishna consciousness, Hinduism, you know, wherever there's immense power, prestige, wealth, you know, there will be persons on the spiritual path who will become corrupted by that. You can guarantee. There's no doubt about that. And if they fear detection, they will destroy people who are literally innocently just trying to take advantage of a spiritual movement, and they would destroy people to prevent detection or to prevent anyone infringing upon their sense gratification. So that happens even in ISKCON. One has to be very, very careful because what we see here is that it's described that we've discussed how someone, Prabhupada, is very, very dear to Krishna. But one of the very first statements that the Lord made here is that those who are very dear to my devotee, they're also very dear to me. So actually, that's the protection every devotee has. That they don't have to be a big devotee. They don't have to be another Prabhupada. They don't have to be a big guru. They don't have to be a big Vaishnava. We're all neophytes. But if they become, you know, understand that Prabhupada is dear to Krishna and my only activities will be to seek Prabhupada's happiness, that person is fully protected as Prabhupada is by those activities. There's nothing that can, they have the full protection of Krishna. Just as Prabhupada is fully connected, one connects with Prabhupada, that what is Prabhupada's happiness, even one is an insignificant devotee, they're fully protected by Krishna. That's what we take from it. And one should, you know, remember that, because in the course of a lifetime, every devotee will come across, you know, other devotees who sometimes have malicious intent. But we don't have to, like Ambarish, we don't have to do anything except remain dear to the Lord. And the secret of being dear to the Lord is to be dear to the Lord's dear devotees. And that's all one has to do. And then one is fully protected. All right. So, boy, it's having good. Any comments, questions? Let's just pause this for a moment. I'll just be back in 1 minute, and then we're going to read the final chapter. We'll go through this of Ambarish Maharaj. All right, be back in 1 minute. And of course, that other point, which is very significant. Some of those verses there, they are quoted in the Brihad Bhagavatam Ritra and what have you in describing, these same verses related to Maharaj Ambarish. They're used in relationship to the Brajabhasis and these exact same verses. They're very crucial verses that we've just read there. And it allows us to know the process of finding that little place in the Lord's heart and by finding a place in the heart of his pure devotees. And the result is that although spiritual understanding is very, very confidential, if you find a place in the Lord's heart, your intelligence lines up with the Lord's heart. So, that is that process of tesham sarada yuktanam, having the good intelligence to be able to look at something and see what Krishna sees. You look at something and you look at it and you see, oh, Prabhupada will be looking at it in this way. That sort of intelligence is what we want. That's the benefit. It gives you quite a special intelligence. But Krishna doesn't give that to everyone. You can read his books, you can read, from morning to night, and you can read all the Goswami's books on, Vrindavan Leela and so many things, but you won't get the same intelligence, the ability to see what Krishna sees significant in any situation that you find yourself in. What to do, what to say, how to act, how to do things in a way that Krishna and Prabhupada are very pleasing. That sort of intelligence, how to get that is to become very dear to the Lord's pure devotees. It has nothing to do with one's intellectual capabilities, materially, or academic understanding of the shastras. And, of course, another way that played out is that in those early days you've got many really new devotees, senior devotees been around for a couple of years sort of thing, and their ability to preach and open temples and spread Krishna consciousness is quite phenomenal. And everything they did, they really had for such apparently green devotees, young, really a little training, not a lot of association. It was quite phenomenal, their abilities as devotees, what they were capable of doing, and their understanding, and their understanding of the essential essence of the Bhagavatam. Not like the Sanskrit scholarly approach that many devotees sometimes have today, but they just really understood the loving exchanges between Krishna, Guru, and the devotees, and like that, they could understand that very nicely. These essential teachings, that we've discussed here, they had that. They had that understanding. What Krishna likes, you know, that loving exchange with the guru and the sender, they understood all that. And so they're empowered to do wonderful things. Sometimes we tend to look back as if, you know, how did they manage, you know, with, you know, being so young and what have you. But the difference is because they took Prabhupada to be their life and soul. And for that Guru Nishtha, Krishna gave them full intelligence. That even today, with the facility that we have, you know, to study the books and the Sanskrit and, you know, all the lessons we can learn and the lectures and so many things, if they don't have that same Guru Nishtha, we find that they struggle for many years to do what these disciples in those early days picked up very, very quickly. That intelligence to be able to do things, get things done. You know? So that's Guru Nishtha, that faith and love for Srila Prabhupada, very genuine. That Krishna just allowed them to know exactly, do this, that and the other, and everything just expanded. You know, but these just very young devotees. So we have to be careful that, you know, we want to teach the Bhakti Shastris, we want to teach the Bhakti Vaibhava, the Bhakti Vedanta. But there's a danger there that if devotees replace Guru Nishtha for some certificates that they can put on the wall, that may not be sufficient. You know? That Guru Nishtha, we learn that from the books, but we also learn that from devotees who have Guru Nishtha. So we have to be very careful that we don't mistake one's academic study of these books as somehow give it too much credit if the Guru Nishtha is not there. We have to be careful, and to be careful of that, because it would be completely out of context with the section of the Bhagavatam that we read, which is the essence of, you know, the Bhagavatam itself. All right, so let's read chapter 5, Devasa Muni's life spare. Sukadeva Goswami said, when thus advised by Lord Vishnu, Devasa Muni, who is very much harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately approached Maharaj Ambarish, being very much aggrieved, the Muni fell down and clasped the king's lotus feet. When Devasa touched his lotus feet, Maharaj Ambarish was very much ashamed. And when he saw Devasa attempting to offer prayers, because of mercy, he was aggrieved even more. Thus, he immediately began offering prayers to the great weapon of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So just see Maharaj Ambarish. So Devasa is touching his feet and, you know, the devotee, they don't consider themselves great. Here the Lord has described how great these personalities are, the Vaishnavas. But a devotee will never think, oh, Krishna's describing, you know, I'm so, you know, fixed up in, you know, my love for Krishna and his Buddha. I'm such a... They never feel like that. One time, someone said to Prabhupada, you are the greatest Vaishnava. You are the greatest Vaishnava within all the worlds. And Prabhupada, you know, very humbly said that, you know, Vaishnava is, you know, you know, we're trying to be Vaishnava. Vaishnava is very exalted person. Vaishnava is very exalted. We're trying to be Vaishnava. That's even Prabhupada's in there. So that is, so here, you know, we're glorifying Prabhupada. Prabhupada's understanding, you know, that he's saying, you know, why Lord Chaitanya, he hasn't, because Lord Chaitanya has left this for me to preach. He knows that loving. Still, you know, a devotee, although the Lord is under their control, they always, you know, understand that's the greatness of the Lord, that how much he loves his devotee, not my greatness. So Prabhupada's, you know, his mood is, you know, the Lord, he's so wonderful. He's leaving this for me to preach. That's his love, not my greatness. Like that. So the devotee always like that. They're, you know, not that one has to be very careful that, you know, because the Lord loves his devotee so much, and if we're nicely situated as devotee, I think so. The Lord loves me so much, so, you know, that makes me a very important or, you know, big person. You know. The Vaishnava never ever thinks like that, even though that's the case. So, so then, and then, you know, Devasa, the giant, he's touching his feet, he's going to offer prayers, so he's aggrieved, you know, what little old me. Thus he immediately began offering prayers to the great weapon of the Supreme Person of Godhead. Maharaj Ambari said, O Sudarshan Chakra, you are fire, you are the most powerful sun, and you are the moon, the master of all luminaries. You are water, earth and sky, you are the air, you are the five sense objects, sound, touch, form, taste and smell, and you are the senses also. O most favourite of Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have thousands of spokes. O master of the material world, destroyer of all weapons, original vision of this personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Kindly give shelter and be auspicious to this Brahmana. And here is Ambarish Maharaj praying to the Sudarshan Chakra to give Devasa Muni auspiciousness and shelter. This person who was, you know, would have killed him in an instant. Very, you know, and so, you know, it's very difficult for us to understand the greatness of a Vaishnava. Very, very difficult. You know, if a devotee or someone causes us some trouble, oh, we want them, you know, removed, you know, from ISKCON, we want them, you know, punished and, you know, somehow, you know, everyone should know what a rascal that person is. We want to get some revenge. We want to get some, you know, justice. But, you know, here, when we think of how a Vaishnava thinks, and we think, you know, they're so exalted. Their heart is so spotless. O Sudarshan Wheel, you are religion, you are... Oh, hang on, no. Oh, yeah, no, we said that, yeah. O Sudarshan Wheel, you are religion, you are truth, and you are encouraging statements, you are sacrifice, you are the enjoyer of the fruits of sacrifice, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and you are the supreme transcendental prowess in the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the original vision of the Lord, and therefore you are known as Sudarshan. Everything has been created by your activities, and therefore you are all-pervading. Purport. The word Sudarshan means auspicious vision. From Vedic instruction, we understand that this material world is created by the glands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sa-akshata, Sa-asajata. The Supreme Personality of Godhead glanced over the Mahatattva, or the total material energy, and when it was agitated, everything came into existence. Western philosophers sometimes think that the original cause of creation was a chunk that exploded. If one thinks of this chunk as the total material energy, the Mahatattva, one can understand that the chunk was agitated by the glance of the Lord, and thus the Lord's glance is the original cause of material creation. O Sudarshan, you have a very auspicious hub, and therefore you are the upholder of all religion. You are just like an inauspicious comet for the irreligious demons. Indeed, you are the maintainer of the three worlds. You are full of transcendental effulgence. You are as quick as the mind, and you are able to work wonders. I can simply utter the word Namaha, offering all obeisances unto you. Purport. The disc of the Lord is called Sudarshan because he does not discriminate between high and low, criminals or demons. Devasamuni was certainly a powerful brahmana, but his acts against the pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish, were no better than the activities of asuras. As stated in the Shastra, Dhammam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam, the word Dhamma refers to the orders or laws given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Savadamam parityagya mamikam saranam braja. Real Dharma is surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, real Dharma means bhakti, or devotional service to the Lord. The Sudarshan Chakra is here addressed as Dharma Setave, the protector of Dharma. Maharaj Ambarish was a truly religious person, and consequently for his protection, the Sudarshan Chakra was ready to punish even such a strict brahmana as Devasamuni because he had acted like a demon. There are demons even in the form of brahmanas. I'm going to read that again. There are demons even in the form of brahmanas. Therefore, the Sudarshan Chakra does not discriminate between brahmana demons and shudra demons. And I always wondered about that, because you hear about Brahmana rakshasas, you know, brahmanas who become ghosts, but they're very evil. And I thought, how does a brahmana become an evil ghost? But you know, as we can see here, you can be a demoniac brahmana. Anyone against the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees is called a demon. In the Shastras, we find many brahmanas and kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. We know that Haridas Thakur, you know, they wanted him, they caused him problems. The Muslims didn't like him converting the Muslims to chanting Hare Krishna, and the Brahmins didn't like Haridas Thakur being a Muslim getting so much credit. And so both of them, you know, acted demoniacally sometimes against him. In the Shastras, we find many Brahmins and Kshatriyas who acted as demons and have been described as demons. According to the Vedic of the Shastras, one has to be understood according to his symptoms. If one is born out of a Brahmana family but his symptoms are demoniac, he is regarded as a demon. The Sudarshan Chakra is always concerned with annihilating the demons. Therefore, he is described as a Dharma Selashura Dume Kedave. Those who are not devotees are called a Dharma Shila. The Sudarshan Chakra is just like an inauspicious comet for all such demons. Hmm. And as we see, one has to be very careful. One may be a devotee, one may be a brahmana, one may be this or that, but if they act like a demon, the Sudarshan Chakra is watching. O master of speech, by your effulgence full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence, for all things, manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. purport. Without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in the material world. The illumination of this world emanates from the effulgence of the Sudarshan, the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illuminating principles of the sun, the moon, fire emanate from Sudarshan. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshan, because with the illumination of Sudarshan, one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. Generally, people accept a powerful yogi like Devasa Muni as wonderfully superior. But if such a person is chased by the Sudarshan chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealings with devotees. So the Sudarshan chakra is revealing what is what. One of the ways that the Sudarshan chakra protects devotees. If someone's a humble devotee, they're trying to please Srila Prabhupada in Prabhupada's movement, and some rascal devotee is causing that person trouble and trying to get self-aggrandizement for themselves, Sudarshan will reveal that. He exposes that. That is when everyone can see. Everyone can see. And that is one of the way he destroys that harmful influence within ISKCON. Sudarshan chakra, if there's harmful influence within ISKCON, Sudarshan chakra will be there to reveal it and expose it and remove it. Indefatigable one, when you are sent by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to enter among the soldiers of the Daitas and the Danavas, you stay on the battlefield and unendingly separate their arms, bellies, thighs, legs and heads. O protector of the universe, you are engaged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead as his all-powerful weapon in killing the envious enemies. For the benefit of our entire dynasty, kindly favour this poor brahmana. This will certainly be a favour for all of us. If our family has given charity to the proper persons, if we have performed ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices, if we have properly carried out our occupational duties, and if we are being guided by learned brahmanas, I wish in exchange that this brahmana be freed from the burning caused by the Sudarshan chakra. And so, you know, when Haridas Thakur was attempted to be persecuted by I think it was Ramchandra Khan, you know, the Muslim ruler, I forget who it was. He wanted him beaten in 22 marketplaces, and you know, one of the Muslim servants, you know, wanted him to have a little mercy with Haridas Thakur, so he amended it. You know, he wanted him beaten to death, and then he amended it that, but if he lives after being beaten in 22 marketplaces, then we'll accept him as a sadhu. And he's free to do what he likes. So after that, they got to the point where they were beating Haridas Thakur, and then they're saying, we've beaten you in 22 marketplaces. If you don't die, the Muslim leader will kill us. So Haridas Thakur, try and do something about that. So he went into a deep samadhi, and it looked like he was dead, and then of course they kicked him a few times and threw him in the river, and then he floated down the river. And then of course, because Lord Chaitanya accepted the beating himself, Haridas Thakur, you know, sometime he just got up and come back, chanting Hare Krishna and just sort of walked into town, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then the actual ruler, he accepted that, yes, he's a sadhu. And he said, you please stay in my kingdom and purify it by your chanting like that. So Haridas the Kaur forgave him. And so all the offences were removed because Haridas the Kaur forgave him, such as the, you know, you see. So here, Ambarish, like that. If a devotee forgives one, that's the only thing. But if a devotee forgives one, Krishna will just, you know, clean the slate. So powerful that is. Even once done terrible, terrible things, such as the, you know. So powerful is the will of the Lord. So you see how the Lord, you know, follows the will of the devotee to the point that even after terrible things. But, you know, sometimes it is described that if the devotee may forgive one, but somehow if the Lord doesn't feel that the person is, you know, properly satisfied his devotee and made that the Lord may make that person suffer anyway. You know, so here Devasa, he's really submitting to Haridas, to Ambarish, that's one thing. So that's in his favour. And Ambarish is forgiving him. So therefore he, you know, he'll get off the hook to some degree. But if one, you know, if a devotee forgives one from a grievous offence, but the Lord doesn't feel the person properly submitted to the vote, he may still, has said that the dust of his lotus feet will still make that person suffer. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second, who is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities and who is the life and soul of all living entities, is pleased with us, we wish that this Brahmana, Devasa Muni, be freed from the pain of being burned. Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the king offered prayers to the Sudarshan Chakra and Lord Vishnu, because of his prayers, the Sudarshan Chakra became peaceful and stopped burning the Brahmana known as Devasa Muni. Devasa Muni, the great powerful mystic, was indeed satisfied when freed from the fire of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus he praised the qualities of Maharaj Ambarish and offered him the highest benedictions. Devasa Muni said, my dear king, today I have experienced the greatness of devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For although I have committed an offence, you have prayed for my good fortune. For those who achieve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the master of the pure devotees, what is impossible to do and what is impossible to give up? What is impossible for the servants of the Lord? By the very hearing of his holy name, one is purified. O King, overlooking my offences, you have saved my life. Thus, I am very much obliged to you because you are so merciful. Expecting the return of Devasa Muni, the king had not taken his food. Therefore, when the sage returned, the king fell at his lotus feet, pleasing him in all respects and fed him sumptuously. Thus the king respectfully received Devasa Muni, who after eating varieties of palatable food was so satisfied that with great affection he requested the king to eat also, saying, please take your meal. Devasa Muni said, I am very pleased with you, my dear king. At first I thought of you as an ordinary human being and accepted your hospitality, but later I could understand by my own intelligence that you are the most exalted devotee of the Lord. Therefore, simply by seeing you, touching your feet and talking with you, I have been pleased and have become obliged to you. Purport. Prabhupada again quotes this verse. Very important, this Sanskrit. Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigaya Nabujaya. Even a very intelligent man cannot understand the activities of a pure Vaishnava. Therefore, because Devasa Muni was a great mystic yogi, he first mistook Maharaj Ambarish for an ordinary human being and wanted to punish him. Such is a mistaken observation of a Vaishnava. When Devasa Muni was persecuted by the Sudarshan Chakra, however, his intelligence developed. Therefore, the word Atmamedasa is used to indicate that by his personal experience, he would understand how great a Vaishnava the king was. When Devasa Muni was chased by the Sudarshan Chakra, he wanted to take shelter of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and he was even able to go to the spiritual world, meet the personality of God, and talk with him face to face, yet he was unable to be rescued from the attack of the Sudarshan Chakra. Thus, he could understand the influence of a Vaishnava by his personal experience. Devasa Muni was certainly a great yogi and a very learned Brahmana, but despite his being a real yogi, he was unable to understand the influence of a Vaishnava. Therefore, it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra, Vigya Na Bujaya. Even the most learned person cannot understand the value of a Vaishnava. There is always a possibility for so-called jnanis and yogis to be mistaken when studying the character of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava can be understood by how much he is favoured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of his inconceivable activities. So, because, one time Srila Prabhupada was, I think he was in India, and one magician came and was performing all these different magical acts, and at one stage he used Prabhupada for a bit of a prop, and, they make the coin disappear and pull it out from behind their ear, and, the Prabhupada said, you're very, very good magician. And Prabhupada says, I am also a magician. And Prabhupada said, can you make birth, death, old age and disease disappear? And he said, no, I can. So, the inconceivable activities, All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment, and the people of this world will always chant your glories continuously. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus being satisfied in all respect, the great mystic yogi Devasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways, he went to Brahmaloka, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Purport. Although Devasa Muni went back to Brahmaloka through the spaceways, he did not need an airplane, for great mystic yogis can transport themselves from any planet to any other without any machine. There is a planet named Siddhaloka whose inhabitants can go to any other planet because they naturally have all the perfection of yoga practice. Thus, Devasa Muni, the great mystic yogi, could go through the skyways to any planet, even to Brahmaloka. In Brahmaloka, everyone is self-realized, and thus there is no need of philosophical speculation to come to the conclusion of the absolute truth. Devasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmaloka was apparently to speak to the residents of Brahmaloka about how powerful a devotee is and how a devotee can surpass every living entity within this material world. The so-called jnanis and yogis cannot compare to a devotee. So, sometimes there are many people who, understand that different space crafts, UFOs, with spacemen have come to this planet. And sometimes, there are different theories that, Earth was sort of colonized or populated by these space people who, we can understand from this that, the space people who may have come in UFOs, because we don't discount UFOs, but they're not particularly advanced from our perspective. Because actually the really advanced persons don't need a spacecraft. So we would consider them more from, perhaps the subterranean sort of heavenly or hellish planets, where they have those sort of material, you know, technology, industrialization, you know, where they may actually come in UFO. So we wouldn't consider them to be, you know, from the higher planetary systems. We would consider the UFOs most likely coming from the lower, you know, places of the universe. Although very, very, very materially advanced, very, you know, far beyond what our material advancement is. We wouldn't consider that they're elevated persons coming from the higher planetary systems. So Devasa Muni had left the palace of Maharaj Ambarish, and as long as he had not returned for one complete year, the king had fasted, maintaining himself simply by drinking water. That whole time, it took Devasa a whole year going, being chased by the Siddharthan Chakra. Then he came back. And that whole time, Ambarish was just drinking water. After 1 year, when Devasa Muni had returned, King Ambarish sumptuously fed all varieties of food, and then he himself also ate. When the king saw that the Brahmin, Devasa, had been released from the great danger of being burned, he could understand by the grace of the Lord, he himself was also powerful, but he did not take any credit for everything had been done by the Lord. Purport: a devotee like Maharaj Ambarish is certainly always busy in many activities. Of course, this material world is full of dangers that one has to meet, but a devotee, because of his full dependence on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is never disturbed. The vivid example is Maharaj Ambarish. He was the emperor of the entire world and had many duties to perform. And in the course of these duties, there were many disturbances created by persons like Devasa Muni. But the king tolerated everything, patiently depending fully on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord, however, is situated in everyone's heart, and he manages things as he desires. Thus, although Maharaj Ambarish was faced with many disturbances, the Lord, being merciful to him, managed things so nicely that in the end, Devasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish became great friends and parted cordially on the basis of bhakti yoga. After all, Devasa Muni was convinced of the power of bhakti yoga, although he himself was a great mystic yogi. Therefore, as stated by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. Thus, it is a fact that a devotee is the topmost yogi, as proved in the dealings of Maharaj Ambarish and Devasa Muni. We know that, you know, when they were establishing Radha Landaneshwari, in the deity installation, that at one stage some of the devotees were behind the curtain, you know, making preparations, and what happened is the altar collapsed. You know the story? And Prabhupada held up that altar and called out, you know, help, help. And different devotees that were there, I think Brahmananda, they said, I mean, that was very heavy, you know, marble and everything. They said it took 10 of those strong men to hold that altar that Prabhupada was holding by himself until they got there. So, 10 of them were struggling. Prabhupada held it up by himself until they got there. Mystic powers. So, you know, but the difference is that a devotee will never use, even they have those mystic powers, they'll never use them to draw attention to themselves for their own purposes. And particularly, the devotees avoid showing mystic potencies, even if such personalities like Srila Prabhupada have them, so as to, teach people that the real attraction should be for chanting the holy name of the Lord. Don't try to become attracted to, having mystic powers or seeking out after, following, yogic processes. So to make sure the people, to not take the attention away from the process of bhakti and the holy name of the Lord, the glories of the holy name of the Lord. They want to glorify the holy name of the Lord. So in this way, because the devotion of service, Maharaj Ambarish, who was endowed with varieties of transcendental qualities, was completely aware of Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus he executed devotional service perfectly. Because of his devotion, he thought even the topmost planet of this material world no better than the hellish planets. As it says in the purport, one does not have to realize Paramatma by the yoga system, for the devotee always thinking of Vasudeva is the topmost yogi. So we see there, everything is complete, not just the mystic perfections, but also the realization of the absolute truth is there. Sri Sukadeva Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, because of his advanced position in devotional life, Maharaj Ambarish, who no longer desired to live with material things, retired from active family life. He divided his property among his sons, who were equally as qualified, and he himself took the order of Vanaprasa and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully upon Lord Vasudeva. So, as described, a pure devotee, Maharaj Ambarish was liberated in any condition of life. As described in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, that if one's only desire is service of the Lord, he is liberated in any condition of life. Maharaj Ambarish was undoubtedly liberated in any condition, but as an ideal king, he accepted the Vanaprasth order of retirement from family life. It is essential for one to renounce family responsibilities and fully concentrate on the lotus feet of Vasudeva. Therefore, Maharaj Ambarish divided the kingdom among his sons and retired from family life. So, of course, even though he's liberated, we see from the Bhagavad Gita that still, such persons who have no duty to perform, such as retiring to take Vanaprasth and go to the forest or what have you, they will still do that to teach people in general that this must be done. Anyone who chants this narration, that's us, or even thinks of this narration about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish, certainly becomes a pure devotee of the Lord.
Jai.
Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core hearing, gives a very good example. When one is eager for more and more money, he is not satisfied, even when he is a millionaire or a multimillionaire, but wants to earn more and more money by any means. The same mentality is present in a devotee. A devotee is never satisfied thinking, this is the limit of my devotional service. The more he engages in the service of the Lord, the more service he wants to give. This is the position of the devotee. Maharaj Ambarish in his family life was certainly pure devotee, complete in every respect, because his mind and all his senses were engaged in devotional service. Savai Manaha Krishna Padala Vindayo. Maharaj Ambarish, thus self-satisfied because all his senses were engaged in devotional service. Nonetheless, He engaged all his senses in devotional service. Nonetheless, although Maharaj Ambarish had engaged all his senses in devotional service, he left his home and went to the forest to concentrate his mind fully at the lotus feet of Krishna, exactly as a mercantile man, even though complete in wealth, tries to earn more and more. This mentality of getting more and more engaged in devotional service puts one in the most exalted position. Whereas on the karma platform, the mercantile man who wants more and more money becomes increasingly bound and entangled. The devotee becomes increasingly liberated. So that is the interesting thing about devotional life, is that it's unlimited. We can increase, no matter how perfect a devotee becomes, they can actually go further, which becomes more blissful and transcendentally wonderful, even though everything is already complete and perfect. By the grace of the Lord, those who hear about the activities of Maharaj Ambarish, the great devotee, certainly become liberated or become devotees without delay. Very nice. So that completes that pastime of Maharaj Ambarish, and some very nice. So we all walked in neophytes and we all walk out pure devotees. No, just... no, I'm joking. But you'll all become pure devotees without delay, except for me because I'm so offensive. But I'll try and stay in your association. All right, next we're going to hear about the downfall of Subhari Muni. Not next week, because we've got Janmashtami, but we'll see you the week after. Jai. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna.